Foreplay. With Pierce McCarthy. Let's talk about the four songs that you wrote that are most personal to you. Foreplay.
Hey guys, how are you doing? And you're very welcome to the last bonus episode to do with season one. In this bonus episode, I've chosen my favourite songs from each of the episodes 16 to 19. That only means one thing, of course. Season 2 is on the way, and it certainly is. Pre-recording has started, so that shall be dropping a little later this month. Back to this episode, though, and the first guest that I'm visiting is Megan Alley, and this is her song, my favourite song, from her appearance on the podcast. This is Whiskey Neat.
Idea that this song is kind of dark, but the melody is so upbeat that it hides the kind of hidden message.
I know, right?
So it's kind of like I Don't Like Monday, you know, that song
by the Boomtown Rats.
Yeah, yeah. So you know, you're singing away to the song, and you know, it's a bopper, like, you know. But then when you actually look at the lyrics, you're like,
it's a school massacre.
This is very depressing, like, yeah. You know, exactly. So I think Whiskey Neat, I kind of wanted to use that same format.
And may I ask, like, the opening line, 2 a.m. and I just can't sleep, drinking whiskey neat, pour myself another drink, raise a glass to an empty seat. Is some of the subject matter in it to do with addiction?
Yeah. Oh, it's kind of being an alcoholic.
Yeah.
So I think I had that course and I think the chorus was real hooky. And for some reason, I just had this lyric, I can't let it go, I can't let it go. And then I was like, oh, I could write a story on that lyric. But I was like, okay, what's the story going to be about? And then I kind of, you know, I was looking in the kitchen and then I just saw a bottle and I was like, perfect. So I was like, kind of centered it all around being an alcoholic. And, you know, you'd have someone on the outside being like, this is killing you, like, you know, and it's probably tearing the family apart kind of a thing. So I wanted to use that storyline to write the song. So again, this song is about two stories. It's the person who's addicted and it's the person who's trying to take care and kind of hold everything together.
Hence why you have the two voices in it.
Yeah, exactly.
There's musicality in the family. Yet, are you the only one that's really gone down the music road? Are you dragging your bros with you now?
All my family are big into writing. So they always, you know, had a way with words. And I think I got into music and then my brother Callan started getting kind of learning as well. And then Aaron kind of joined the bandwagon. And we nearly have my other brother Jack in on it now as well, you know, so we're nearly the Von Trapp family, like, you know. We're getting there.
Because the one thing though, and I think it's beautiful when I hear you and your brother sing together, you can't beat sibling harmonies all the time.
It was mad because when he did it, like, it was just, I didn't have to show him, I didn't have to teach him. It's like he just did it instinctively anyway. So we've done a lot more kind of other songs since in covers, like, but it always amazes me that he's able just to kind of do harmony so naturally.
Staying in Cork, and we virtually visited Jack O'Rourke, and the song that I'm choosing this week was still in a demo stage. It's brand new. It's the gorgeous Strange Bird.
Strange bird flying through deserted town. She got no plumage, she got no song. Records the quiet in her memory. She's a computer, and what are we? Hugs our few here, hugs our skin. Scans the town for some human touch. We keep our distance, we don't embrace too much. Oh, to hold you tight like it's out of style. The sun goes. lying down on a town. Let your light shine on. Let your light shine on. Strange bird flying through deserted towns. She got no plumage. She got no song. Records the quiet in a memory. If she's a computer, then what are we?
It was just, I suppose, the idea of the first lockdown, and I missed a lot of people, like everybody else. And you go through different stages during lockdown. I remember writing it feeling very emotional. I was listening to The National, and I think the melody came from that, and the words. And it was around that time that I wrote that John Prine had died. And I remember thinking to myself, what would John Prine, you know, do? He'd probably find an interesting way of looking at this, as he always did, in a very understated way. As a writer, like, and I then remember after I'd written it, you know, at different stages, kind of going, oh God, we're out of lockdown now, and that ship has sailed. And Jesus, I was very self-indulgent to write that. But looking back now, particularly at the moment, I think everyone's found the third lockdown quite difficult. And as I said to you at the start of the interview, you kind of have to face yourself, you know, all of the distractions other than social media, which is such a toxic distraction, you know.
It's unbelievable,
but,
isn't it?
But even distractions like that are necessary, like meeting people, like playing football, like, you know, jamming with your mates, going for an ice cream, all the different things that we take for granted, hopping on a plane and going to, you know, knock for the sake of it. But I remember thinking during, oh, that's a bit, you know, look what's happening in Palestine, you know, but everything is relative, and I think we all felt it. And I think the sense of stillness, that was sometimes a bit eerie. I think that song somehow sums it up. It's just basic. It's about a drone, a strange bird, a drone recording a town in lockdown and what it sees.
What's your preference, live or studio?
Live, yeah. I like being in that moment when I like the intimate gigs where I'm on my own or with a cello or with my band, but I miss audiences at the moment. I meticulously perfectionist, even though a lot of my life is chaotic in the studio, and I often second guess myself. So I could record something in Christian Best, and then a week later I'm ringing him going, oh, I'm not sure about that. So I'm a fucking nightmare to work with that way. But it's only because I care so much, I think, about my own sounds. I'm even finding at the moment I've written a whole load of new sounds, and because of lockdown I have to wait to record them, and I'm sending them to different musicians to try things, and you know. It's another dance.
Yeah.
Dance of death.
But I guess with the whole live experience, each show is different because you're feeding off the energy in the room, be it a big room or a little room.
Yeah, it is. And I mean, you know, gigs like the Opera House with an orchestra are amazing, and it's kind of, you're blown away by the bombacity of it and the enormousness of the sound. But I love sometimes even just playing Collins, you know, in that little living room setting, and you can see people's expressions and how they're reacting to your songs. And I find I did a lot of gigs over lockdown, you know, as part of the stimulus that venues got, which was so great, you know, to get out of Cork. But you really, really then kind of go, oh God, yeah, this, you know, it's amazing what an audience will do to change a gig or to change the energy of just the space, you know.
Not travelling far for my next guest, staying in the wonderful rebel county of Cork. And I was joined by Mary Green from Greenshine. And the song that I'm playing this week is The Girl in the Lavender Dress.
Sky. gathering flowers. She doesn't care about numbers or notice the hours. She feels the wind on her face, sees the grass start to move. She's floating away. She's finding the groove. All through the night, all through the day, the girl
I wrote it years and years ago. Ellie was only, I think, five or six when I wrote it. And I had just dropped herself and her sister to primary school and I was having a walk. And this line came into my head, the girl in the lavender dress is gathering flowers. I don't know where it came from. And it became a song about freedom and optimism. And for a young mother, as I was at the time, it was helpful, you know, because myself and Noel had come from a life where we were very free to pick up and go. And, you know, and it does take an adjustment when you have children. Mm. You have to buckle down and there's a school run and all the rest of it. But this song was about freedom, really. So I parked the song, did nothing with it. I did a very basic demo with Declan Sinnott years ago. And he said to me when we had recorded it, just me and the guitar, and he said, that song means a lot to you. And it was the first time I realized, I thought, well, yeah, it does actually. And I couldn't figure out why. But years and years later then, when we were making our second album with Greenshine and we were looking for songs for Ellie, and I ran through a few with her and I said, what do you think of this one? And I played it to her and she said, yeah, that one, I'll do that one. It kind of opened up a lot of doors for us as well. It really kind of brought us to the attention of people in Ireland, especially in Radio Land. Mm-hmm. And it went on to be the third most played Irish track of that year. And we did it at home here in our little studio.
It must be an amazing feeling as a mother and a songwriter that you write this song when your little girl is just a wee baby, and then all these years later, she's singing it on your album.
It's unbelievable, really. And I couldn't get over it when it happened, really, you know, because, well, it just goes to show that the song was still relevant, you know, like 20 years later, the song was still relevant. And that said a lot to me.
When you wrote that, did you know that you wanted all these little ditty things thrown in as well? Or was that something that kind of came to you in studio?
And I suppose all my life I've listened to all kinds of music, you know, every type you can imagine. And when I started to write sounds, some of them I could hear strings on them. You know, I could hear it in my head. I'd love to hear strings on this. And then, you know, when you have a little studio, which it's a very modest studio we have here, you know. But when you have it and you have a keyboard set up and you have a couple of guitars, you have an electric and you have, a bass and a mandolin, whatever is there, concertina even stuck there somewhere. And you have no time pressure. You can add all these little spices to things and you can take them off if you don't like them, you know. You can replace them with other things. You can try all sorts of things. And that is the way we record. Usually I might have a plan in my head for the general direction, the general instrumentation, and we'd lay it down and then I'd say, well, what about this? And Noel would say, well, what about this? And, you know... We just have as much fun as we can in the studio, you know.
And my final virtual visit in this bonus episode takes us across the water to the UK, where I was joined by Gary Moat of Rocker's Burnt Out Wreck. And this song was my favourite from this week. It was called Dead or Alive.
Good, and I'm pounding for it tonight. getting on your motorbike or getting in your fast car and just putting your foot down, and all of a sudden there's a slight mistake and boom, off he goes, whoever it is that's driving, you know.
Yeah.
And it's just the thrill of the big engines, you know.
Yeah.
Petrolheads.
I love the line, up ahead, cross the line, flying past it, feeling fine, but the brakes just failed, crashed and burned against the rails.
Yeah, it's crazy what you can come up with, isn't it? When you're forced into it. Write a song, quick.
Yeah, what was touring like with the likes of these huge bands that you guys toured with back then?
Well, you know, it was just great fun, you know, being the first on the bill, you know, and just off we went. You know, we were drunk all day long, all night long. We went on stage drunk, you know, and, you know, we don't do that these days, obviously, you know. Yeah. I'm sober all the way when I hit the stage, you know. But way back then, yeah, you didn't care because you were young, you could handle it. You were just out there having a blast. But yeah, I mean, Kiss, I mean, imagine playing Wembley with 10,000 people staring at you, you know, and I'm hiding behind my drums thinking, oh my God, look at the size of this crowd, this is just crazy. I feel like a wee mouse back here, you know. So yeah, great, you know, and it just all kept rolling along, as it were, you know, and
yeah,
made us who we are today, really, you know?
Yeah. And what were the guys from Kiss like? I mean, you were this up-and-coming band. Were they open to you guys? And were they good for giving advice and whatnot?
Yeah, definitely. Gene Simmons, you know, he was in our dressing room, you know, before we went on stage every night on that tour, for instance, you know. And when my single came out, it went into the charts. Not a really high position, but it went in a good position, and he bought us a bottle of champagne to celebrate and stuff like that. You know, it's like it's just so long ago. You know, it's like three lifetimes ago nearly now. You know, it's
yeah,
like,
the happy days, a good start to any career, eh? I suppose more than anything, it's left you with so many memories.
Yeah, it's a shame it didn't leave me with money, but memories is great, yeah.
Yeah, memories doesn't pay the gas bill, though, I guess. Thanks for listening to this episode of 4Play. If you're an artist or a band and you're interested in getting in touch, then you can do so in many different ways. You can email me at podcast4play@gmail.com, on Twitter at podcast4play, on Facebook at 4Play Music Podcast, and on Instagram at 4Play Music Podcast. Thanks for tuning in again, and we'll chat soon.